Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast, episode 15. I'm Dan Tomlinson, and I'm joined, as always, by Rich Harrison, a.k.a. Pommy. Rich, how are you doing, pal?
I'm very well, mate. How are you going?
Yeah, not so bad, thank you. Just enjoying the mini heatwave that the UK's got right now. The Euros have kicked off, full FC have won. All good.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, good weekend.
Yeah, not bad. England winning 1-0, obviously, with the football, so that was good. But yeah, Hull FC getting a good win at Cass by 30 points to 12 after a shaky start. I must admit, I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, to say we conceded early and to a freak try, you know, your heads could have gone down, but we didn't, and played our way out of it. And, you know, it was an old-fashioned Hull going through the gears experience, wasn't it? You could actually just see us just building and building and building, and by the end of it, you know, Cass couldn't live with us, which is great.
No, absolutely. Yeah, to score either side of half time was obviously a really, really good spell in the game for UFC. And to be honest, in that second half, I was never in doubt that we weren't going to come away with the 2 points. And when can you say that? Yeah. Watching all for a full half. I mean, soon as 18-6, you know, Swift scores that third try, that was it. I just knew, you know, we were never gonna turn the table there and lose that game, which is a good sign of all right now. It shows us a lot of trust in them. And I think that goes with the defensive improvement that we've seen throughout the year. And yeah, it's just nice to polish it off and get, you know, what really was a good win. I know Cass had a few out, but so did we. And obviously we had a bit of adversity losing 3 players during the game as well. So when you factor everything in, you know, I don't want to turn it into a pissing contest, but you factor everything in, that has to go down as a good win. You know?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, 4 minutes, you know, 2 minutes either side of half-time. Just that won us a game, basically. Fanua goes over just before half-time, and then Swift goes over just after. And, you know, we went up by sixes because Sneed was back on form with the boot a little bit. And, you know, when we skipped to 18-6, that was it. We were never going to lose that game from there. You're dead right. And, look, a really workmanlike, really professional performance. Won in the forwards again. I thought Mao was unbelievable, Manu Mao. And, you know, and yet again, like we say every single week, Satai and Sao, again, just phenomenal. So really good, mate. A really good workmanlike performance, and something that we needed. We said that was a game that was almost a must win. So that's now kick-started the second half of our season nicely, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully we can kick on, get a few wins now. But as always, you take nothing for granted in Soap League. I think that's shown this weekend with Lee pushing Catalans all the way and only losing by 6 points in a, I think it was a 11 try thriller. So, you know, fair play to them. Satai and Sao, unbelievable. You know, they're phenomenal week in, week out. Glad you pointed out Manu Mao there, because he still gets a little bit of criticism from fans. I'm not sure what we're expecting, but, you know, as far as solid carries go, you know, big hits in defence, leadership, he ticks all those boxes for me. He's, and we've said it every week, haven't we? He's been solid, not spectacular, but what he does do is very, very good.
Yeah, he was very good, I thought. And I thought Sevilla in patches was good. He did a lot of defence, Sevilla. He didn't really bend the line much. I thought he was very solid in defence. I was like 35, 36 tackles or whatever, which is just ridiculous. Same with Satai, same amount of tackles, I think. And but I thought Mao, he was a threat every time he got the ball. And he ran with purpose. He didn't, you know, we managed to manufacture it so that he didn't get the ball standing still. He always managed to break the line when he got there. I thought he was very, very good.
Absolutely. And yeah, that all ties in with a fight amongst the UFC right now, which is absolutely fantastic to see after years and years of being so soft. And it's like one and all in now. And I just love that. When the game got a little bit tasty, no one backed down. And in some cases, i.e. Josh Reynolds, they seem to thrive off it even more and get more involved and go up the gears. And I love to see that, because we have been so soft in years gone by, and we've been so nice, and we've seen other teams get away with stuff, and we're scratching our heads thinking, why don't we do it? Or why don't we at least try to do it? And I like it. I like the fact that we are literally a team of grubs right now. We've got our star halfback is nicknamed Grub, but we've got that grubbiness to our game now. I don't think we push it too far beyond the the game's legalities, but it's just nice to see that fight there and, you know, a long way that continue, because I'm sick of seeing, you know, old teams get bullied in the past by your Wiggins and your St. Helens. And if you think we've gone with 10, you've 10 past Masters over in the Cup, Wigan, when we beat them in the quarters, and then you think, again, Castleford, that quite easily could, especially with a home crowd that obviously very vocal and then to try to intimidate the referee, it could have quite easily gone the other way. But just to see that fight amongst Hull FC is fantastic.
No, I totally agree. And Fash again, I thought off the bench was very good again. Just never takes a backward step. And but you're dead right. I mean, it used to be that we used to get intimidated like that, and we used to get bullied off a little bit. And you know, like we've been saying all season, we're still a prop or two props, arguably short. And also, you got Matongo sat on the bench with a long term injury, and you've got Taylor on the bench with a long term injury. If you're ever going to bully a Hull side, you're going to bully a Hull side that's already short of a prop and then with two sitting on the bench. But we're just not allowing it to happen. You know, we've got, I think our second rows are big and mobile and are quite capable of stepping up into prop if they have to. So, you know, you have Satai and Sao. Then you've got Mau and you've got Sevilla and you've got Bowden coming off the bench. You know, it's just, it's great. It's really, really good. It's There's no drop off in our go forward from the start of the season when we had more players to choose from. You know, it's great. The issue that you've got is that how long can we sustain it? Because, you know, Satai gets an injury or he gets a head knock or something like that, then, you know, we're going to really miss him. We're going to really miss him. So, mate, long may it continue, and hopefully it will.
Yeah, it's a good point that, because the games do get tougher in sense of the closer together now. You know, we've got a few back-to-back weekend, double-head weekends coming up, and yeah, the fixture list is a little bit congested, especially going into July and August, and that's when you do need your full extent of your squad. You need your Scott Taylor's back. We're going to need, you know, obviously Josh Bowden firing. He picked up an elbow injury again. It's just, the bloke just can't seem to get any luck at the minute, whether it be ACL's back, elbow, you know, ankle, you name it. It's just, yeah. You got to feel sorry for him because he can't get everyone in the team, can he?
Totally, mate. And I really felt for Cam Scott as well. I mean, just as he's getting a run in the team, you know, and I really, really felt for him. I think that doesn't look like a good injury, does it?
No, back of the shoulder, wasn't it? AGA joint.
Whatever it is, yeah.
Yeah, didn't look friendly. It's a shame because he's looked really good, Cam Scott, the past two performances he's had. You know, he's a bit shaky. Catalan's at home. He got, you know, exposed a little bit by that, you know, big French side, and came in again on the cup game against St Helens. He was very good, and to be fair, he had moments against Cass as well. It's just typical. You think you lose Carlos as well. It's his chance to shine at Lee next week, and obviously the week after is Derby and then Salford. You think he can get a few starts under his belt, and yeah, and he gets bloody injured. It's just typical. And then, you know, there's no smoke without fire, is there? And you look at Jude Ferreira, who's obviously injured right now. Even Harvey Barron's got an injury. So, you know, you're looking at the outside backs right through to the bloody academy. They're all, you know, it's tough. And it is going to be tough for all over the next few weeks. But I must admit, I was very impressed with that, again, with the mental attitude of Hull FC to lose those players and not be fazed by it and just stick to the job. Not be fazed by going, you know, 4-0 down in the first minute. Yeah. You know, a teenage winger goes around, Brett Freemo scores the first try the game. He's back at school in the morning. I mean, what a story that was. But, you know,
Hull could, quick as well, isn't
yeah, he? Yeah, he's rapid. You know, fair play to that kid. Yeah, he backed himself and, yeah, it was a great try. But, you know, we think the first 20 minutes of that game, Hull's completion was atrocious. I think it was one set they completed. And you think Eds can go down there quite easily. You've got, let's say, you've got a boisterous home crowd. You've got, you know, they get right behind the cast and, you know, right on the pitch. And it could have quite easily gone the other way. And I must admit, I was really impressed with Hull to come back and continue to back themselves. You know, there was, a few errors, whether it be a drop ball, you know, a missed timing of passes, missed timing of runs. You know, there's a couple of kicks out on the full as well, but they kept backing themselves. And it takes some balls to do that, to stick to your structures and stick to your shape when your execution is a little bit off. And I just thought it just shows a lot about how they buy into what Brett Hodgson is implementing right now as well, because they stuck at it. Eventually, the execution improved, and then the points came.
Yeah, absolutely. And how good was Connor's 40-20?
Yeah, that's not bad.
Ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? It normally, when you see a player kick a 40-20, they put some real welly into it. You know, there's a real follow through with the boot and all the rest of it. He just kind of leaned back and just stroked his foot on it. It just looks so just easy. He's a freakish player, isn't he? He's a phenomenal player. We need to announce this contract extension now.
Get it done. Really,
the longer it goes on, the worse I feel about it, you know?
Get it announced going into the Derby the week after next, then everyone will be bouncing. Get Huddersfield out the way, the home game. Then you've got the Derby. Yeah. Announce it then. Everyone will be bouncing going into that fixture. But, yeah, 13 assists, top of the charts. It speaks for itself, doesn't it? Ball and hand is absolutely outstanding. And you think some of the games we've had in Super League this year, we've had 9 games now. Some of those we've hardly had any ball. And for him to you know, be leading the comp with 13 true. Assists is, it just true. Shows the type of player he's outstanding.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, now it becomes, I mean, I know it's Lee next, and Lee haven't won a game yet, but they're, you look at it, I mean, their last, what, six matches, you know, they had Saints and Wigan back-to-back and competed in both of those. They got towelled up by Huddersfield and towelled up by Rovers, but they should have beaten Wakefield and arguably should have beaten Catalans this week as well. So, I mean, they're actually, they're not as bad as not won a game suggests. You know, that they're very capable of springing a bit of a surprise. So we've got to be careful there. And with a bit of a depleted squad, I'd be very interested to see what we look like as a back line. Because, I mean, obviously Swift and probably Farima are going to be the wingers with Mahe and, well, would you put Farima in the centres and bring Vuliki Japani in?
Or, well, apparently, I mean, what... apparently he can play across the back line, as in... Vuliki Japani apparently can play fullback, centre, and wing. So if he isn't, you know, right. If he can play centre, then why not? I know it's, it might be you're exposing him a little bit more at centre, aren't you? But yeah, who knows? Maybe he can do a job there. But there's nothing that's not, you know, if he wants to swap with Freemo during the game, I don't know. He can mix and match there. But left edge sorts itself out, doesn't it? With obviously Adam Swift and Mahe Fenua, who must be said that's he was right. outstanding. Wasn't he? He was a threat.
It was unplayable.
Yeah,
was
threat
unplayable.
Every time he got the ball.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, no, very, very good. I mean, you know, I mean, I'd even go so far as to say that that's his best position at the moment. And I think the reason that it's his best position is that's the correct side of the field for him, I think. And I just think he's more of a threat that side of the field because the way that right edge defenders defend, they defend in a little bit, he's never going to beat someone on the outside for pace. But hitting the ball at an angle, I think he's better at that side of the field. And with Swift on his outside, who is speedy and everything, the fact that Mahe's got that ability to offload, he can get a late offload to Swift, I think that's almost a perfect centre-wing combination, I really do.
Yeah, it's a fair analogy. We all forget that, don't we? And I know it's 5 years ago, and obviously time flies and all that, but
Mahe is... as a centre.
Exactly, and it's his favourite position. If you speak to the bloke, you say, Mahe, what's your favourite position? He'll say centre every time. Obviously, he'll be very humble, and he'll say, wherever the team needs me, I'll play. But given the choice and the luxury, he'd want to play centre every day of the week. And obviously, his first year at Hull, I know he made his debut on the wing, got injured, came back against Rovers in that derby, played at centre, ripped him apart, never looked back. You know, two players at Wembley. He's an absolute immortal of the club, isn't he? So... He's a very good centre. It needs no introduction. It's a position he's played a lot. Obviously, he's played a lot of wing too. But to be fair to the bloke, I know he took a lot of pelters for. Obviously, St Helens getting 3-on-1 overlaps in the league game. I mean, I mean, you know, God forbid him. I mean, how dare you concede a try when you're 3-on-1? You should be shutting that out, shouldn't you? According to some fans. But to be fair to him, he's been solid for weeks on end now. He's done his job. He makes his carries. You know, he's good with yardage. He returns the ball well. I ain't got a problem with him at the moment. He's, like I say, he's been good for weeks on end now.
Yeah, and I thought Farima was good too. To say he was coming back into the side after being dropped and everything, I thought, you know, and especially against the team he's likely to be playing for next year, I thought he was fairly solid. You know, you're right. I think Fanu has been helped a massive amount by the fact that the crowds are back.
Yeah,
because he's such a confidence player that playing in front of a crowd, shouting his name, chanting, you know, screaming at him and everything, he really, that's what makes him a better player. I think of all of Hull's players, playing in an empty arena would probably affect Mahe more than anyone else.
No, that's fair, because you're 100% right. But I remember when Adrian Dereham wrote his all-time Hull FC team in the cream a couple of issues ago, he actually put Mahe Fenua as one of his centres, largely based on those cup-winning performances alone. But he said that when Mahe celebrates and when he scores a try, you can see it in his body language. He enjoys it just as much as we do as fans. Mm. And I think you sense that when the crowd, you know, when the crowd stay off his back and get behind him, he absolutely thrives off it. You can see him bouncing when it happens.
Yeah. Do you know, I can equate it to, I mean, from the era that I was... You know, going home and away to watch Hull. He's a little bit like a Paul Eastwood type winger in that, you know, he wouldn't score 100 metre tries, but he would bustle and he's practically impossible to stop from 5-10 metres out. But when Eastwood, because he was a kicker as well, you could see, I mean, even if you never saw the ball go between the sticks or miss the sticks, you could tell by his body language afterwards whether he kicked it or not. You know, if he kicked it, he was bouncy, and that his run back to his position was boisterous, and you know, he was full of cockiness and everything. If he missed it, his head went down, and he'd kick himself for a couple of minutes that he'd missed the kick or that he'd dropped the ball or whatever. You could really see real confidence player. It's exactly what Mahe is. Exactly, almost to the T. You can tell. You can tell right away whether he's kicked it or whether he scored a try or dropped the ball or whatever. He wears his heart on his sleeve. And we love him for it, you know. Yeah, he's got an error in him, but who hasn't?
That's the type of player he is, though. It's like the Connor stuff we spoke about last week after the Cook defeat, yeah. You know, and that pass. I mean, they're not going to get on his back there because he'll make that same pass, that same play will happen again, yeah, in the future, and he'll nail it. And, you know, shock horror, what happens a week later at Cassie, puts two tries on an absolute stick, you know, scores one himself later on. That's the type of bloke he is. I can live with it. And it's the same with Mahe, I suppose. You can live with the odd error if it ends up with him, you know, throwing a pass out to Adam Swift to score, or if it ends up, you know, with him plunking the ball down himself. You sort of take the rough with the smooth, don't you, a little bit? And we all cry out for this vibrant, eye-catching attack that we want to see LFC play. Well, if you are going to play that brand of rugby, then you will make some errors. Obviously, it's about finding the balance in it and playing when you've earned the right. So, you know, play when you're in the right areas of the field. And to be honest, I thought we did that at Castleford. I thought it was, you know, it was really good. I thought it was smart as well. And I just, as I say, I know I make the point again, but I just love the fact that I was never fazed by any errors that anybody made. We just kept going, sticking to the, obviously, what they believed in. And eventually the tries and the openings came. And it just takes some balls to do that. It really does. And that's in abundance with LFC at the moment. They are a fiery side, but they stick together, and I'll absolutely love that. Long may that continue, because you're going to get tested. You know, we've seen it in the two games against St Helens, but it's going to come later in the season where you're in those horrible, you know, those tight games, and you're going to need a big player to win it, and you're going to have to back those players to produce when it matters. You know, you're Jake Connors, you're Mahe Finua, and yeah, I just like that brand of rugby. And as I say, if an error comes, so be it. You can live with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's epitomised by Josh Reynolds as well, who has got an error or two in him, and has got a drop ball in him, and has got a penalty against him. But then, you know, he just forgets it and just goes about the next play as if it's the first play of the game. You know, that's exactly, he's a true eyes up, heads up player. You know, he plays what's in front of him, regardless of what's gone before, which is a fantastic thing for a halfback. You know, he's probably the opposite of a confidence player. He'll just play the same way, regardless, and regardless of the scoreboard as well. And I just thought he was great against Cass. I thought he was very good. He got under their skin. They hated him. I mean, one appallingly timed tackle, which that was just ridiculous. I mean, he just threw himself there, didn't he? But you know, and then saying to the ref, you know, I wouldn't. What was he saying? You're the boss. I wouldn't do that to you, mate, or whatever he said. That's just brilliant. I mean, just vintage Josh Reynolds. So yeah, mate, that's a really it's a really a good sign for us moving forward. I think in that him and Snead look like they're forming a bit of a partnership there, which is lovely to see.
Absolutely, and again, coming from the 9 and the 1, who I thought, obviously, Jake Connor was very good, but Danny Outon as well kept things ticking over, and Shock Horry has a better game with the ball when his tackle count's a bit lower. I mean, he was in the 30s as well. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, the effort and the commitment when he goes 60-plus, and like you say, against Warrington when it was, what, 84, 85, whatever it was, you know, you applaud that and say, wow, what an effort. In any rugby league play, you clap your hands and you say, well done. But it's not great, is it? I want my hooker channeling his energy. I don't want him making 60 tackles. I want him in the 30s and 40s, and then he'll make an influence with the ball too. And he did against Castleford. I thought he was very good. You know, he got his forwards moving. Obviously, it's easy to play behind a pack that is dominating, and when you've got Satire's quick play of the balls, it must be an absolute dream for an hooker. But yeah, I thought he was good, you know, Danny Outon. I thought he was very good. Like I say, kept things going, and fair play to him. Snead and Reynolds were excellent. I think Max Snead is a very, very, very good player. You know, we all know my thoughts on him. He's outstanding. He's a big game player as well. He always steps up when we need him. And yeah, it's good to see that combination with Reynolds starting to tick a little bit. It's no surprise Reynolds has had two good performances now, where Hull get, you know, a bit of ball. I know people were saying he was quiet in previous games before the Cup game. And yeah, he probably was. But, you know, Hull spent the full game defending. How was a halfback supposed to influence it when Hull, you know, if you think of that Leeds game, for example, where we couldn't get out our own 20? What's Reynolds supposed to do there? But, you know, you give him some ball, you give him some opportunities. I thought his running game was sensational. He always takes the line on, which is good to see. You know, he's obviously a fiery player. He's not afraid to get stuck in either. I mean, obviously, you've got the side to the game where he's a little bit cheeky with the officials, a little bit cheeky with the opposition fans. I mean, I love that. He's a character, isn't he? And he's the type of player that brings people to games. He's the player you want to go watch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's box office is the thing, isn't it? I mean, you can't take your eyes off him. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, you know, when he was playing for the Tigers, it was probably a bad thing a lot of the time because he was struggling to get that consistency in his performances because he was in and out of the side. But when he was at the Bulldogs, you never took your eyes off him because he was the one that was always going to make the spark. He was going to make the half break. He was going to be the difference in two sides. And, you know, how long is it since we've signed a player like that? You know, I don't think we ever have. Yeah, you know, a player that you look at and just go, he's the X factor.
Yeah, absolutely, in all senses of the word. And when you think you've got... You think your two biggest grubs in your team are your one and your six.
Yeah, it's sort of kind of,
it does highlight the need for a little bit of mongrel in the pack, don't get me wrong, but we're not far off. We're really not. I mean, look at that span. It is a very good span. Our outside backs, when they're fit and firing, are as good as any in the league. I mean, we're going the right way now with our Adam Swifts, and if, you know, rumours are to believe, Daniel McIntosh next year will be a good buy. You've got Maher Fanua as well, who's obviously returning to form. You know, we're not far off at all. You get a couple of middles.
We're not.
You know, another year of Brett Hodgson as well. Exactly. You know.
Two props and we're there.
Yeah, absolutely. I really do believe that, mate. I really do. Because when we've got the fight that we've got right now, we're never back down. We've been in every single game this year, barring the league game at St. Helens, where you can say, OK, fair enough, they just blew us away in that opening 20. You know, you're a phenomenal side. Fair play, it happens. But you know, every single other game this year, we've been right at it. We've been right in the contest. And that's all you can ask for. The effort, the commitment, it's outstanding. Get a couple of props. Another year of Brett Hodgson's, obviously, philosophies and structures, shapes, you'll name it. Obviously, a little bit of retention, he'll get the players he wants in. He'll let the ones he necessarily don't want at the club, he'll let them go. You know, a bit of recruitment. I really do fancy our chances, mate. We really are. We're not far off at all.
No, we're not. And recruitment's the big thing, isn't it? It really is the big thing. There's a few players off contract, and we need to be making some decisions right now as regards who we're going to go after before it's too late. And I'm sure behind closed doors it's happening. I'm sure it is. But, you know, there are a number of players that we really should be attacking from a forwards point of view that we need to get in touch with, and we need to start making overtures to pretty quickly.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Aaron Woods and Matty Tapau, can we get both of them? Is that a bit greedy?
Tapau's re-signed. He's re-signed a one-year option, I mean Woods is a possibility. I mean, he's a meter eating forward. Makes a lot of meters backwards. He's a bit like a Josh Bowden in that respect. He tends to turn his back on the tackle and kind of pump his legs backwards. But there's him. Titans have got a few off as well, but Sam McIntyre is a possibility, but he'd probably pick up another NRL club, I'd say. Seagulls, I don't know. The player I'd love to see is Curtis Sirenen. I think he's a great player, Curtis Sirenen. And if he was in any other team other than the Seagulls, I think we'd be talking about him as an Australia representative, you know. An absolute bolt for the Blues team. But because he plays with Manly, I think he kind of gets overlooked a little bit. I love Curtis Sirenen as a player. I'd love to see him at Hull. There's a few others. I mean, the Warriors have got a couple off as well. The Knights maybe have a couple off as well. But again, it tends to be halfbacks and backs that are out of contract. The forwards tend to be signed up for years in advance. There's not a massive amount that's coming up, but the ones that you want, like I said, Woods would be one I'd be looking at going for, and also I'd be looking at talking to a couple of clubs that might have decided to cut players before the time. There's a lot of movement going on at the moment. I know the Tigers have just picked up Ken Mamala from the Warriors, and he's got a hat trick on his last game for the Warriors, and then burst into tears and just kind of buried his head in his hands because he was leaving the team that he's played for the last 7 years. But he'll be a Tigers player this morning. So, you know, there's a lot of mid-season movement, and I honestly think that there'll be a lot of players that might find themselves surplus to requirements, even though they might have a contract for next year, they might actually get moved on. So, you know, I don't think just looking at an off-contract list is all we need to be doing. But there's a few players that we really should be looking at, I think.
If you look at...
And you know, there's obviously the English. There's obviously, you know, English teams as well. The one I really wanted and I thought that we might have made a ploy for, but I think he's gone back to Huddersfield. Is it Ike Hefifo?
Sebastian Ike Hefifo, yeah. Yeah, he was on loan at Salford, wasn't he?
Yeah, but I think he's back. He's going back to Huddersfield and re-signed for next year, because I think he's struggled from being a very good player in poor teams. Mm. I'd love to see him with a good team around him.
Yeah, that's a fair shout. I was just going to say, when you look at the middles that all have signed in recent years, you think Mickey Pierre, Chris Sattai, Liggy Sal, they haven't been household NRL names by any stretch of the imagination. No. They've been on the fringes. No. They've been playing reserve grade, but it takes. You know, you need a bloke in your club who's got an eye for that. And Lee Radford was nothing short of phenomenal at finding players. You'd like to think your James Clarks, your adaptations. You'd like to think they've learnt something from that and will maybe go down that route as well and pick up another one. But, yeah, I think every LFC fan will admit that we definitely need a couple of more middles for next year. Obviously, signing up the two that we've currently got in Chris Sattai and Liggy Sal is imperative. The RFL did announce their out-of-contract list last week, or it might have been over the weekend, actually, and two names who were on there were Sattai and Sal, which means they've either re-signed with Hull or they've re-signed with another club. Hopefully it'll be the former.
Else, yeah.
I mean, if it's the latter, I think we're all going to cry and burst into tears. But, yeah, hopefully it will be the former. There was a few others there as well. Obviously, Jake Connors wasn't on that list, which means his future's been resolved. Hopefully, again, that'll be at Hull FC. Adam Swift as well, I think, would be mad not to re-sign him. I think it looks like we have Josh Griffin too. So, yeah. I think we are. I think we've got the recruitment right there. There's obviously people who were on that list are people like Brad Fash, who I think he's actually deserving of a new deal, to be honest. I mean, you mentioned him, didn't you, earlier? And his performances have been brilliant off the bench. I don't think you can ask much more. And the thing is with Fash, if you've got a good, you know, you've got... You need six middles, don't you, in the modern game? You start with three, you've got two props, you've got your loose man, you want three off the bench as well. And I think there's definitely a place for Fash within the six there. And, you know, if you've got four blokes who are 18 stone, 6 foot two, you know, brick shithouses like you're satirising yourselves and you'd Scott Taylors and then one more, and you've got Fash coming on with them, I ain't got a problem with that because he'll do you a job. You know, don't miss many tackles at all. He hardly ever makes an error. And to be fair, he was close to 100 running metres against Castleford. Again, I know it's a bit up in air
off
there.
Off the bench.
You're off the bench,
yeah,
exactly.
Off the bench.
Yeah, all off the bench, yeah. I mean, you can't knock him.
No, you can't. You can't. That, you know, I think every team needs a couple of those, don't they? You know, just solid players that are going to come on and you know, you can throw them on in the middle of, you know, in the middle of a really tough game and know that they're not going to let you down. You know, which is, you know, sometimes, you know, we've all had it over the years, you know, we go to the subs bench and someone comes on and you kind of go, oh, Christ, here we go. You know, because it's a player that's likely to drop a ball or make a mistake or give away a silly penalty. Fash does none of that. He's just solid. He's dependable, and he's not flash. You know, he's not going to score, a weldy, or he's not going to make a break or whatever. But he's not going to let you down either. And you know, just as a solid bench player, I mean, I don't think you could do much better. I really don't.
No, I agree. Like I say, he's getting to that age now. Was he 25? His best years, obviously, as a middle, are still ahead of him, and he is getting better and better. And we, you know, when we first did this podcast, we challenged the likes of Fassus and Yumatongos to get to that next level. It's unfortunate for Massey. Obviously, he's picked up a horrible knee injury that's going to sideline him for the full season, and that's unfortunate. Obviously, you don't wish that on any player, and obviously, you wish him well. But Fash has ticked that box. He's done that. For me, he has gone to that next level now, and he's got to the stage now where he's coming on, and he's actually affecting games. The thing is, he's not a Chris Sattai. He's not going to badge, you know, people over, skittle people, time after, you know, carry after carry after carry. But like you say, Brad Fash, he'll come on, he'll be energetic, he'll make his carries, he'll make his tackles, and yeah, he's error-free. He's everything you want off an interchange prop forward, and he does bring some energy to the team, and he has an impact. So, yeah, very happy with the way he's going there. I suppose the downside now is obviously the effects of the Castleford game, and the, obviously the three injuries we've picked up. It don't obviously the whole FC will be privy to more information obviously today and tomorrow, Monday, yeah. Tuesday when they go for scans. But Carlos Tumavivi don't look good. Cam Scott don't look good, and neither's Josh Bowden. Then you've got the dreaded RFL match review panel. That usually comes up, yep. ironically, after we finish recording this podcast. So
yeah.
it's probably a good job, otherwise we'd go into meltdown mode.
You remember, there was a couple of weeks back, remember when we thought, oh, brilliant, we'll do the draw for the cup live. And then they went, oh, no, sorry, we've lost the balls or whatever. And we're like, oh, bloody hell, it's yeah. ridiculous. Yeah, I know. I mean, obviously, there's options there. I mean, there's... We got a couple of players there that might fall foul of that, haven't we? So, you know, you just got to hope. You just really, really got to hope that we manage to dodge the worst of that, and that you know we can bring a Vula Kijapani in or someone like that to kind of plug a gap, and then you know just move forward with a skeleton squad for the league game, and then hopefully get some bodies back the week after. Because yeah, it's starting to look very thin, isn't it?
Yeah, and it was a thin squad to start with, so you get several injuries, and it's going to show. But I look at Josh Reynolds, for me, if he gets banned, I will be hitting meltdown mode, because the technique wasn't great. It was unorthodox to say the least.
It looked worse than it was.
Yeah, it wasn't high. It wasn't high or anything like that. It was just weird. You know, like I say, it was just unorthodox. Daft, yeah. just daft. There's nothing wrong with it in terms of high tackle or leading the shoulder or anything like that.
No, it was a penalty. It was a penalty, definitely, but I think that's
well, leave it there.
That's as far
yeah.
as
yeah. The Sneed tip on Alex Foster, obviously. I mean, really, the Cas physio or doctor actually put, I don't know if you saw it, it was on Twitter, put like a full explanation about the procedure that they did with Alex Foster, because obviously he regained his feet and then they told him to go back down again so they could stretch him off. Mm. It was all to do with the spine and the back. It was quite insightful, to be honest. But people are going to look at that. Match review panel will look at that and think, right, Sneed, that Sneed tackle's just obviously made an injury for that Alex Foster. Do we ban him for it? And I don't know, because it wasn't where he was tipped onto his head. I mean, did the feet actually go beyond the horizontal? I mean, for me, it was a tough one. I mean, I'm looking at it live, and for me, there's nothing in it. But obviously, you freeze frame it when you're watching on Sky. It's a completely different picture.
Yeah, it was hard rather than dirty, wasn't it? I don't think it was dirty at all. I don't know. We'll have to see how we go there. I mean, I suppose the nice thing is that if Sneed does get a ban, you just bring McNamara in like for like, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Straight away, which isn't a bad thing. I think McNamara needs game time, and who better to give him game time against than the team that's bottom currently? You know, I think that's albeit what I said before, which was that, you know, I think Lee are a wounded animal at the moment, and, you know, new coach and all the rest of it. I think there's every chance that could be a potential banana skin for us. You'd say that if Sneed does get banned, then McNamara comes straight in, and I don't think we miss a beat.
No, that's fair. Thing is with Lee as well, the longer that losing run goes on, it arguably makes them more dangerous, because they're going to win at some point. Mm. Not going to go the full season without winning.
Yeah,
I mean, even the Canterbury Bulldogs, even they managed to win in the NRL. And you think back a few years ago when Newcastle Knights had a few years at the bottom, they still picked up one or two wins, didn't they? So a win will come eventually. They're not going to go the full year without winning. So, yeah, and it goes with our mentality and attitude that when we've banged those drums all season. I think Hull FC's attitude and Hull FC's mentality is right. You know, they're not going to go to a Lee and be complacent or anything like that, because they know if they don't turn up, then they will get beat. That's like the Hull FC of old, isn't it, where... You know, you didn't know what you were going to get, and we knew as fans that if we didn't turn up, we'd get smashed, and that's what happened. And obviously, that's what cost Lee Radford his job. But yeah, you'd like to think it's a little bit different now. Speaking of Lee Radford, that was great. It was great to actually be at an away game again, and you know, actually stood with your mates and have a laugh and take the piss out of everything and everything for 80 minutes. That was great. But coming out the ground, we had to go around the side stand to the exit at the Weldon Road end, and obviously that meant going past the Sky Lot, like a box in the terracing, and Lee Radford. It was good to see the smile back on his face. Obviously fans were chanting Radders is a dadders, and Lee Radford is one of our own, which seemed to have woken a few people up in East Hull, saying, oh yeah, apparently he's a Robin. Yeah, he was a Robin as a lad, but let's not forget he won Hull 2 Challenge Cup, so cheers, pal.
Oh yeah, well, he did. It was quite funny, actually, because what actually happened there was, I thought Sky were a little bit disingenuous with what they did with him, actually. It was almost like they'd ambushed him a little bit. Right. You had Carney saying to him, "I know you've never seen this before, but we're going to show you the at the moment you were sacked live on air." And I thought, well, that was a bit dodgy, you know. To be honest, at that point, I think if it had been me, I think I'd have probably just walked off. But you know, he was very gracious and said, you know, it was the right decision or whatever. Or, you know, it was time, and you know, it hurt a bit at the time. And but you know, you got to understand that that's the way it went, and blah 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 blah. And he said, so then he said to him, well, so how are you looking at this? Do you look at this as a Hull supporter, or do you look at this as the new Castleford coach? So, I mean, straight away, you're giving a bloke, you're asking him a question, but you're only giving him two potential answers.
Yeah.
So, like Radford always does, he found a way out of it, and he just went, well, Hull fan, you know, yeah, I was there 17 years, but I grew up as a Rovers fan. So, and all he did is he just tried to deflect the question.
Yeah.
It was a throwaway remark. And then, obviously, the east side of the river, because, you know, they're buoyed at the moment because they're in the top six, and, you know, the internet's been turned on. And just grabbing hold of that and going, ha, how funny is that?
But, you know. Nothing new, though. Yeah. We all know he's an East Hull lad. We all knew he was the junior, so, Robin. We all know that. But he made himself at Hull FC. Came from our academy. Yeah.
Did he play for Rovers? How many games did he play for Rovers? None. Exactly. How many games did he coach Rovers? None. You idiots. If that is all you've got to be proud of, the fact that the coach of your biggest rivals used to be a Rovers supporter, well, bloody hell. How hilarious is that?
Well, just while we're on a bit of Rovers bashing as well. When I used to do the old Daily Mail stuff, City of Hull Academy, and there was one game where, I remember it clear as day, City of Hull were like 28-10 up and ended up drawing the game with Castleford 28-all. And I didn't make the headlines, I just did the report, but the headline was something on the lines of, you know, City of Hull throwaway lead to draw. And I remember Jason Everton getting straight on my back saying, oh, it's not about results, you know, blah, blah, blah. What did Hulk Hag gloat about straight away on Thursday morning?
No.
Well done, lads. You've just won an under-16s game. Yeah, congratulations. I just thought you were hypocritical twats. You know, you have a go at me constantly for saying things and saying it's not about results. Yeah. It's about bringing players through, which ironically they've done bugger all for the past 20-odd years now. And obviously, all bear the fruits of that because we've brought through plenty. I'm just thinking, get your head out the stand. You know, it's... They are a Mickey Mouse club.
And by the way, did you see the try that they used to illustrate the point? The guy dropped it.
Yeah.
The kid dropped the bloody ball.
Yeah, he did. And I must admit, I'm glad you pointed that out again, because the referee that game is called Dan as well, and he's a Cottingham Tigers lad, and he could get a lot of stick for that. And, you know, he's a young kid as well, learning his trade as a referee, so there's no need to get on his back. Mistakes happen, don't they? The point...
You could actually see from the angle of the thing, you could see that he was completely unsighted. There was a player in front of him when, you know, you haven't got a bloody video ref, have you? And you know, I mean, arguably that's your linesman's call. That's not your call.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. Yeah, yeah. Mm. But it just shows a Mickey Mouse club that they are. They're an absolute basket case of an organisation. I mean, if I won the lottery, the first thing I'd do is buy them and liquidate them.
Yep.
I mean, roll on that derby in 3 weeks, Dan. Can't wait to shut them up. But yeah.
I've always said it. Me and my old man used to talk about it all the time. Just say that if you ever win the lotto, what you do is you walk in there, you pretend you're a Rovers supporter, you walk in, red and white shirts on, you know, you say, I've just won the lottery and I'm going to save this club and blah, 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 blah. And then at the massive press conference, you actually just say, actually, April Fool, I'm a Hull supporter. You take the red and white shirt off, you've got a black and white one underneath, and you say, and unless you pay me back the money that I've just paid off all the debts, I am closing you down in 24 hours. Thank you and good night. You walk out.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'd do as well, bugger him. But yeah, I think it's about just about kicking on now, innit, from a whole point of view. We get this league game out the way with whatever 17 players that day. I'm sure the Hull fans that are there will back them. I mean, that's a point. £30 to watch a game of rugby next week, which is just, that's daylight robbery. That's bordering Premier League football prices. It's disgusting, but I suppose it is what it is. And Hull fans being what they are, they'll pay it and they'll go. But yeah, we do fall into the idiot bracket. Me and my old man will be there. you get that out the way. You've got Huddersfield at home, then it's the Derby, then it's Salford, you know, Lee again, Huddersfield again, Leeds, or a basket case right now, you know, dodging fixtures against top sides. I bet they won't have any COVID problems when they play Wakefield in a fortnight's time.
Yeah, Yeah, you could say that.
I've got no doubts about it. They've got Catalans this week. I tell you what, if they go, I'll be amazed. If they travel to the south of France, I will actually be amazed, because I bet they'll be calling that game off soon. I mean, that's scheduled for Saturday afternoon. It won't take place, I bet you that. Wakefield in a couple of weeks will, though. Oh, they're all fit and healthy for that.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you. As an organisation, they've got no redeeming features for me, Leeds. You know, the fact that the Hetheringtons are in charge, the fact that Agar's the coach, no redeeming features at all.
No, absolutely. Same goes for the football club as well. We all hate Leeds. Right,
it's
then.
The same thing. It's the same thing, mate. They have the same song, so it's the same thing as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on then, Origin. We got our tips hopelessly wrong last week, as pointed out by a couple of listeners on Twitter. Cheers, boys. But who saw that coming? New South Wales, 50.
Could I have been more wrong?
50 points to 6. I mean, we love the number 50 for obviously Wembley-related comedy values, but wow. You know, that was Tom Trbojevic in a floating centre role was absolutely incredible. You got James Tedesco at the back, Nathan Cleary and Jerome Luai, a boisterous pack of forwards, two very good wingers in Brian Toa, Josh Adokar. Just absolutely blitzed them.
Yeah, and look, from what we were saying last week as well, about what happens when Shaw comes back from injury, you know, the way that they used Tom Trbojevic there was phenomenal. Just using him just giving him a roving brief in attack. You know, he was popping up on the opposite wing. You know, he was as the right centre, he was passing to the left winger at some point. You know, it was phenomenal. I've never seen anything like it. Especially in such a big game as that, to actually give him that roving brief, that's ballsy from the coach. And as much as it pains me, because I really don't like him, look, New South Wales were absolutely great value for the win. Queensland were terrible and just got absolutely mugged, I think. It'll be interesting to see what Paul Green does next, because he's going to have to make some changes there. He really is.
What can you do? How can you turn that around, you know, 44-point losing margin? A home game, and obviously that was in Queensland. I know it's obviously a suburban ground up in Townsville, but it's still in the, you know, the state of Queensland, and to get mulled
You're dead right. And I mean, I think I said to you last week, I think New South Wales were quite happy that if they were going to play it in Queensland, they were going to take it up to North Queensland, because I think that takes the crowd out of it a little bit. I mean, I know they're all still screaming and shouting for Queensland up there, but it's not that hothouse, you know, absolute cauldron of noise that Suncorp is. You know, that ground's open at one end. You know, the noise just dissipates up in North Queensland. It's a weird... I can't believe they've built a ground with three sides. It's just ridiculous. Like Rovers ground. So, you know, it's a bit odd, that. But I think New South Wales were quite happy that it was there and not at Suncorp. Obviously, the next game is at Suncorp, so that's going to be interesting. You've got to hope... If you're Paul Green, you've got to hope that Ponga's fit. And you've got to hope that you get some troops back, I think. They'll be hurting, and they will not want to capitulate in front of a team, in front of a massive, you know, 60,000 plus crowd at Suncorp. I can't see them winning a game this series now. I honestly thought they'd win the series 2-1 after what happened last year. Just goes to show the difference between being coached by Paul Green and being coached by Bennett.
Mm. Absolutely.
You know, that's Bennett's dream, Bennett's job. He's basically as a Queensland coach. So it's his best role is to be a Queensland coach. That's about it. It's just he just puts an extra 10 points on that team, I think.
Well, he definitely did last year, but I mean, to be fair to the bloke, took a lot of pelters as England coach, probably a few from me and you as well. But
certainly
when you think,
me.
I mean, when you think of what he did, he turned that around from a team that couldn't compete in his first year in 2016 to a team that literally, what, a try away from winning the World Cup to thrashing New Zealand the year after, beating him in the Test Series as well. Obviously, the Great Britain stuff was just an embarrassment. I don't think he wanted that. I think that was clear. I think he would have rather had another England series, maybe a Kangaroo Tour or, I don't know, three tests against Tonga, you know, Samoa, whatever. But... yeah, it's a shame how it ended.
He did lasting damage to the Great Britain brand.
Yeah, he did.
No doubt.
I think that's more than fair. Yeah, but that the whole thing though, the whole Great Britain tour, it was late announced. It just seemed to be rushed and not thought out. It was an embarrassment to the brand. It was the total lack of respect to the brand, but not just from Wayne Bennett. I'm talking from the RFL as well as an organisation. Yeah. They didn't show it any respect. And yeah, it's a shame what happened there. Interestingly, England actually play a week on Friday against the Combined Nations All-Stars. It'd be the first time England have played in nearly 3 years. You have to go back to Remembrance Day, 2018.
Yeah.
I mean, that's shocking. COVID or no COVID. I mean, how are you supposed to enhance rugby league in the UK when your national team don't even play? I just think it's disgusting. I mean, again, I was asked a question at the start of the year by a St. Helens fan site called redfeed.net, and it said if you could change anything about rugby league, what it would be, what would it be? And I said the lack of internationals, simple as that. You need England playing. And it's sort of think with the state of origin. I mean, we need something like that over here. I mean, we need an England equivalent. I don't know how we get around that. I don't know if it will be the Exiles, like, say, whatever they're called now, but we need something.
Yeah, I think the Exiles is probably a better concept than War of the Roses, as it used to be. Because, you know, who gives a shit? Lancashire, Yorkshire, it's not the same as New South Wales and Queensland. It's not. It's really not.
Could we go down to France as an England team? Could we go down to the south of France every year and play the best of them? I mean, they got some players. If you have to say to your St. Helens, though, you've got to release Theo Tharge. You know, the French players at other Super League clubs need releasing, so you can put the best French side out there. And I do think if you played the game in Carcassonne, if you played it in Perpignan, I do think they'd give England a game. Mm.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, you can't do home internationals. You know, you can't do England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland. You can't because there's just not enough. There's not enough players to go around, basically, you know. And then you're having to. There's that ridiculous thing of digging up someone's grandmother who's bloody, you know, part Irish, you know, and all of a sudden you got plastic paddies. And, you know, I mean, I think wasn't Richard Horn was eligible to play for Wales, Ireland, and Scotland and England because he was born on the Isle of Wight. It was something stupid like the Isle of Man. Because he was born on the Isle of Man, he qualified for every home nation.
Wow.
And, you know, he actually debuted for Scotland in the 2000 World Cup before then he became he ended up playing for England and Great Britain. You know, it's just ridiculous. That 2000 World Cup, Hull had players, you know, Mick Jenkins, who was our hooker at the time, would come down from Gateshead, was playing for Wales in that. He was about as Welsh as, you know, he's not. You know, he's got a name like Jenkins, but it was his grandfather that was Welsh. You know, and you know, you had Ian Heron playing for Ireland, and you know, it was just ridiculous. It was just a ridiculous spectacle. You know, we got to play to our strengths. And honestly, like you say, I think Exiles is probably the way to go. You know, you got an England side against the best of the overseas players. I think that's and look, I do it as a two match series or a three match series. You know, just give that England team, get them match hardened. You know, but yet again, you know, he's called four new players into the team and Connor's not involved again. I don't know what he's going
to
do.
Yeah, Reece Flynn, obviously, Holborn lad, let's see, academy play, sort of, yeah, I think, okay, it's nice to see. But over Jake Connor in the form he is in. I must admit, I'm a big fan of Joe Westerman. I love Joe Westerman in his two spells at all. So again, I'm pleased to see him in. I sort of look at it from an OSC point of view right now. I'm kind of glad because we need Jake Connor playing for all.
Yeah.
So I look at it from that, and I'm hoping Two Machines don't pick any of our overseas players either. You know, let him pick Conrad Hurrell, let him pick Tui Lola here. That don't bother me at all.
Yeah. Bloody Conrad Hurrell. Jesus Christ. Yeah, I don't get it. Do not get it. Yeah. Oh, dear.
No, yeah. I don't.
You know, he's one of them that if he was offered to Hull, you'd look at him and go, no.
No, thank you.
It's not even a close one, is it?
Cheers, pal. No, thank you at all. But yeah, it's popular, isn't he? And people seem to like him because he does a few dances after he scores. But yeah, obviously, Carlos is out the equation now anyway, isn't he? But you've still got your Manuel Mouse, your Matt Hifnil, your Josh Reynolds, Chris Satter, the form he's in. There's no better prop in Super League right now. And you can only pick three, though, from each club. But
God, it worries me.
Yeah, it does.
It
the injuries
me,
we've got right
is
now.
If they're going to get injured on that kind of duty, that worries me. I mean, that's how we lost Steve Prescott.
Yeah.
Steve Prescott. Yeah. fractured his kneecap playing for Lancashire against Yorkshire in the last War of the Roses.
Yeah.
And you know, never played full again.
2003, I remember it.
Yeah, 2003, you know, that's how we lost him. So it always worries me. You know, I'm Hull first, rugby league second, you know, international rugby league second. And, you know, when we've got a season like that we've got now where, you know, semi-final of the cup and you'd expect us to be in that top three, top four, top five after this next round of fixtures where we play some of the lower sides. This is a year that we could actually really do something. And to be derailed by an injury crisis would be appalling. And to be derailed by an injury crisis that was because of England versus bloody All-Stars, that would really piss me off. So, you know, sort of don't pick any of them. I don't care. Just let's get through at the end of the season.
No, I get it. And what winds me up is the fact it's not a standalone weekend. I know Origin, obviously Origin wasn't either. And you look at Penrith Panthers and they're probably thinking, yeah, it's absolutely great to have six players involved, but on the same, you know, the same page, we've just lost back-to-back NRL games, basically because of Origin, simple as that. They don't lose them two games with Nathan Cleary and Jerome Luai and Brian Tua and Isaiah Yeo playing Kurt Capewell. It just doesn't happen. And I get it, it's sort of like a double-edged sword. Do you want the game to grow? Yeah, I do, absolutely, and I want England to play, but why can't it be a standalone fixture that's put, you know, set in stone absolute months in advance, you know, like an England Test cricket thing, which we know the calendar for the next 18 months, don't we? Why can't it be like that? And then people can plan for it, they can go, they can sell the fixture out, make it a huge event. You go from there, everyone's happy. But no, unfortunately, England, it's rushed, it's rugby league, it's obviously rushed, it's last minute. It's at Warrington, the bookie, if there's, well, COVID restrictions, there'll obviously be 3,000 people there at a push.
Yeah, I know. And you compare that to Origin,
No comparison, is there? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Origin's got the advantage in that there's kind of like myth and mystery about Origin. I mean, just from the way it started, you know. I mean, because they'd played New South Wales against Queensland games before, but they haven't called them State of Origin. They were just rep games, you know, because there was a separate league for Sydney and a separate league for Queensland. And it used to be the best players from that league, not where you were born. It used to be if you're playing in Queensland, you play for Queensland. You know, if you're playing in New South Wales, you play for New South Wales, regardless where you were born. And that first game, you know, they build it as mate against mate, state against state, and all the rest of it. And people were saying, well, this is ridiculous. You know, you got players that play for the same club team. They're not going to go up against each other. They're not going to fight. They're not going to have a go. They're not going to do anything. And the very first tackle of the match was when Arthur Bateson went absolutely steamrolling into a player that he'd played half of his career with. You know, and all of a sudden people like went, oh, here we go. This is different. You know, and it grew from there. And now it is, you know, possibly the pinnacle. I think he's probably even more, winning a State of Origin for an Australian player is probably more than representing Australia.
But that's because the Kangaroos don't play. I mean,
Their
schedule since the World Cup 2017 has been worse than England's. They've hardly played, they played about five games.
Yeah.
Obviously, they got beat by Tonga, they beat New Zealand.
Yeah.
They got beaten by New Zealand as well.
We always used to have the Anzac Day test and everything. Obviously, COVID's kind of put paid to that.
It's still poor. Yeah. Like you say, COVID or no COVID, the international game needs vast improvements. So, like, nice to see the chairman behind that, Nigel Wood, get a OBE over the weekend. I'm thinking,
job for the boys, that one.
Oh, unbelievable, isn't it? I'm thinking, services for rugby league. What? What's he done? What's he done to the international game of the past 2-3 years since he's been chairman there? He's done bugger all. It's just, the mind boggles sometimes, doesn't it?
It really does. Nice to see this weekend as well, though, that in the NRL coverage, the Rugby League World Cup was referenced a couple of times.
Right.
With a lot of English players playing over here, you know, like today, Thompson at the Bulldogs, who probably had his best game I've seen him play, actually, over here. You know, I'm saying, you know, he'll be part of the England mix-up in the World Cup. And even Dominic Young, who played a couple of games for Huddersfield, the big, tall, rangy winger. He's like 6'7", big black kid. Played for Newcastle Knights. He was mentioned a couple of times in the call when they lost to the Bunnies, because he'll be representing Jamaica in the World Cup and everything. So, you know, then, you know, the commentator was saying, well, you know, they're in a group with Lebanon and they're in a group with I think they're in a group with Lebanon, Wales, and New Zealand. So you know, there's a chance there they might get a result against Lebanon. And you know, kid like that, 6'7", really good to see. You know, so I mean, they are trying to, even if they're paying lip service to it, they are talking about the international game and the upcoming World Cup. But it was nice to see, at least.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and fair play as well to the blokes that did play Origin then backed it up for the club side. I know. Yeah. Obviously, Dally Shelley Evans was one. Manly got an excellent win. You know, 50 points on the board again, so fair play to them. Obviously, some clubs like Penrith opted not. I know they played Liam Martin, but they opted not to play. You know, obviously, the majority of the Origin stars, there was a few other examples. Obviously, Melbourne didn't play a couple of theirs, but yet still managed to win 42-16. they're a machine, aren't they? Unfortunately, the Storm, they are just an incredible machine. They just never stop.
Yeah, Brandon Smith. What a hooker. What a player. I love him. Absolute dynamo. Just brilliant. I mean, if you go through the card this week, like you say, Manly with Cherry Evans backing up 2 days later, were just phenomenal against the Cowboys. Cowboys have just gone back, you know, a couple of weeks, I think. I honestly thought the Panthers had beat the Sharks. That comeback was incredible by the Panthers, but the Sharks just kind of skipped on and just got that field goal. So, I mean, what can you do? The Titans and the Roosters was an absolutely batshit crazy game. It was stupid. I mean, the Roosters should have won that by an absolute country mile. Titans came right back and then the Roosters skipped away again. Just ridiculous. The Bunnies and Knights was probably the most boring game of football I've seen in years. It was terrible. The Broncos really played the Raiders back into form, I thought. I thought the Raiders weren't great, but the Broncos were awful. You know, I mean, to bring Carmichael Hunt back from, you know, I think it was 4,000 days since his last game of rugby league.
Jeez.
It looks 14 years or whatever since his last professional game of rugby league, because when he left the Broncos, he went to play AFL and then he left them and went to play rugby union. It was his first game of rugby league in 14 years, whatever, and he was in the halves for the Broncos.
That comes as a result of losing Albert Kelly, won't it? I mean, that's sort of why he's left Hull, though, isn't it? Because you think 3 games, he's injured again. And that was the story the last 2 years at Hull.
Yeah. Yeah, did his hamstring in the captain's run. You know, he'd been named. So that the Broncos had to go to the NRL cap in hand and ask for special dispensation to get a different halfback. Because they dropped Tyson Gamble for form. You know, they'd said, you know, you're out the 21, but we're not interested. And then to have to bring him back at the 11th hour and have to go to the NRL and ask for special dispensation because Kelly's hamstring went, you know. So, yeah, just awful. Like I say, Storm and just absolutely towed the Warriors up. Lee said about the Eels smashing the West Tigers the better, but I don't think we've ever won a game at Bankwest Stadium, certainly not against the Eels. And you know, it's a beautiful new stadium out there at Parramatta, and unfortunately, it's one of the Tigers' home grounds, and it's not proving to be a happy hunting ground for us at the moment. And then, wonder of wonders, the Bulldogs absolutely put the Dragons to the sword just before we started talking, actually. I just finished watching it. 28-6, and the Dragons looked abject, absolutely appalling. You know, everyone complains about Matt Dufty being shown the door at the Dragons and saying that, you know, he's one of the fastest players I've ever seen and he's dynamite and he's electric and everything. Probably the worst defensive fullback in the game and just looked disinterested tonight. And I know they've cut him and told him he's got to find a club for next year, but he ain't going to find a new club playing the way he played tonight. He just looked like he's not interested. I'd be very surprised if he picks a club up.
Almost like announcing players are leaving and then expecting to perform is a bad recipe.
Well, kind of. But then, you know, you look at the Sharks the other night. You know, the post-match. Mm. Yeah, the Sean Johnson saying, you know, if there's any clubs out there looking for a halfback, come and get me.
Yeah.
You know, I'd had a good game. So, you know, you put yourself in the shop window, don't you? Same with before the match, they were talking to Aaron Woods as well and saying, you know, well, what about you? And he's like, you know, I'm sure I'll pick a club up. There's a couple of clubs that, you know, my manager's talking to and, you know, there's a lot of work being done behind the scenes. I can't really say anything at the moment, but, you know, I'm sure it'll be fine and I've just got to concentrate on putting my body on the line every week for this club and getting us into the eight and getting us into the finals. And that's the attitude you've got to have as a player, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's the nature of the job, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, not everyone has that mentality, though, do they? And no. Obviously, in Dufty's case, right. Obviously not. Obviously, in Aaron Woods' and Sean Johnson's case, obviously, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, you look at the other side of it, and you look at the fact that Boyd Cordner had to retire. And that's the kind of hot off the press that happened today, the press conference, and to watch him in tears announcing his retirement at the age of 29, when he's currently the Roosters captain, the Blues captain, and the Australian captain, having to retire at the age of 29 due to repeated head knocks.
Yeah, it's not good.
You know, it was heartbreaking to watch and watch. You know, he's a one club player, and you know he's an absolute diamond of a bloke by all accounts, and it was horrible to watch. And I honestly think there'll be a few other players that'll follow him with that exact same reasoning. I think I don't think Wade Graham's far off retiring through the head knocks. He seems to get a knock every time he takes the field for the Sharks. I think he might be fairly close as well if he gets another couple.
Yeah, sad stuff. But I think again, it shows how we do get it right with HIAs now. And yeah, when the club doctor makes the call, and obviously they're off, and it's definitely the way to go. Hull FC Australian connections. Then this week we've gone for a blast from the past, and that's the Illawarra Steelers.
Yeah, well, I thought, you know, a couple of reasons for this. I wanted to do the Dragons, and I thought, well, if we do the Dragons, then there's really three teams there, because there's St George before the merger, then there's Illawarra before the merger, and then there's the St George Illawarra Dragons after the merger. So I thought we'd do Illawarra, especially because, you know, a lot of people that are listening to this will have been to Wynn Stadium when Hull came across, and had a few beers at the Steelers Club, as we did. So there's actually a surprising amount of players that have played for the Illawarra Steelers and Hull FC. It's actually took me, I thought it'd be a pretty quick one, this, but it actually took me a couple of hours to research this. So let's start with a couple of names to conjure with. Obviously, Greg Mackey is probably the big one. He at Hull from 89 to 92, either side of a very short stint at Warrington, and then finished his career in England at Warrington. Was an Illawarra Steeler for a lot of years, and was obviously an absolute game changer when we signed him. Was very, very, very good. We look again at players from that same era. David Moon, who was a player at... He was one of Brian Smith's first signings for Hull. And in fact, Smith had coached him at Illawarra as well, because that's where we got Brian Smith from. Around that same era as well, maybe a couple of years later, Peter Spring. Remember Peter Spring?
Vaguely. That's a bit before my
vaguely
time. I was going to say, big, there.
Big, fat, forward with the worst mullet you've ever seen in your life. Like, it's just, yeah, just he now runs a club down in Flats, which is just around the corner from Illawarra, and he still looks exactly the same, except the mullet's gone now. Craig Simon, who was one of the players that came down with the Gateshead contingent in 2000. Now I always think Craig Simon was a bit of a missed opportunity for Hull. Did very, very well for us in that year when we merged the two teams together, and we had all the kind of Hull FC youngsters, and then all of those kind of journeymen Aussies that came down from Gateshead. I mean, we did really well that year, and Craig Simon scored 13 tries that year, and when we came to the end of that 2000 year, we were given special dispensation, obviously, for that season. But then we were told at the end of that season we had to actually get back down to the proper quota, and so therefore a lot of players that had played for us that year became Hull FC one season players like Chuck Heron, players like Craig Wilson, who also was an ex-Illawarra Steeler, and players like Craig Simon. And I honestly thought that he was unlucky to be cut by Hull. I really liked Craig Simon, and he's from around here. He's from the area of New South Wales that I'm currently living in, and they're a very, very proud Aboriginal family, the Simons. His brother played as well, and I thought he was unlucky, Craig Simon. Mia David and Brad Heppy as well, and Andrew Purcell. Andrew Purcell, either a hooker or a second row forward, he actually has a management, a player management company with Craig Murdoch. Is it MAP?
MAP Sports.
Sport? Yeah, Andrew Purcell and Craig Murdoch, because they met when they were both at Hull. And good bloke, Andrew Purcell. Really good journeyman footballer, and never let Hull down. He did very well for us. And then we come to a name to conjure with, Philly Saru, who we've already mentioned in a couple of teams for Hull. Was very, very good the first season he played for us. Second season, least said the better, but he did have Graham Hallis as his centre trying to feed him, which, you know, would have made Martin Afaya look like a cart horse. So, yeah, good old Philly Saru was in there as well. Craig Wilson, who we mentioned, and also Craig Fitzgibbon. Started off his career at Illawarra before he went to St George and then went to the Roosters after that, and then to Hull, and then back to the Roosters, and then his next year's Cronulla coach, so Craig Fitzgibbon. Now, also, while we're talking about Illawarra Steelers, we've got to talk about Brian Smith, because we got Brian Smith from Illawarra when he came to us in 88. And you got to look at Brian Smith in context of other Hull coaches. He's got the highest win percentage of any Hull coach apart from Arthur Bunting. 62.7% win percentage. Played 83, won 52, lost 30, drawn 1. That's pretty impressive, especially when you consider that Arthur Bunting, who his win percentage was nearly 70%, that also included the full season that we had in Division 2 where we won all 26 matches.
Yeah.
You know? Brian Smith's win percentage was all top grade matches. It was all Division One, and that's phenomenal. A 62% win.
Especially percentage. As well, you consider what he inherited.
Oh God, yeah,
makes it even better.
Basket case. Yeah, we were terrible. You know, and I think we lost the first four games under him as well. I remember Dan O'Hara coming out and talking to the Old Daily Mail and saying, "You know, you need to stick with us because something's happening here." He said, "You know, I said I've never seen this before. This is, we're going to do something this year." And everyone was laughing at him. We're none from four. What the hell? And then we went on a massive winning streak. You know, we ended up finishing fourth that year. I think under Brian Smith, we finished fourth, sixth, third. I think. Just a complete game changer, considering that the club had dropped so much from that 85. You know, being at Wembley 85 and probably having one of the best squads we've ever had, to 2 years later, 3 years later, avoiding relegation on the last day of the season, and you know, Len Casey coaching us, and just, you know, just absolute, like I say, a basket case. The fact that Brian Smith came in and brought Craig Coleman, David Boyle, and David Moon, and Neil Henry actually over as well to play for us, just. I don't know. He managed to get the best out of very average players, which is all you can ask for from a coach, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't say that Brett Hodgson is working with average players now, but he's definitely turning from good players into very good players, and we've seen that already. Yeah. He's obviously stamped his mark. He's definitely improved the FC. Some of the improvements, especially defensively, are staggering. Obviously, comparisons are maybe a little bit wild to make right now, but the signs so far are certainly promising.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, I think it does that is something that does bear a little bit of closer inspection. I think Brian Smith built that team on a defensive attitude first. Yeah, I mean, we had a tricksy halfback, and you know, but we never put 60 points on teams ever. You know, we were always gritty and we were grinding, and we'd occasionally, you know, come up with a weird and wonderful combination. Or, you know, I think the first season that Smith was there, there was a runaround move that we used to do with Craig Coleman and Gary Devorty, which was just, we scored off it time and time again. And Craig Coleman was only there for half a season. But we scored off it time and time again. And it was just great to see. But there were very few moments like that. It was that was a side built on graft, and a side built on forward power, and a side built on working for each other, which is very similar to what's happening with Hodgson at the moment, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And as a fan, you can get behind that. As I said, if it's not flashy 99% of the time, you can still get behind a side that are hard-working, that are totally committed, effort in abundance. And as I say, it's easy to support. Long may it continue.
Absolutely.
And on that note, thanks for your time again, mate, for this edition of the podcast. And come on, you will.
Nice one. See you soon.